Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. Now that it's time to shake off the haze caused by this year's Thanksgiving turkey, we'll get straight to our health. Today, we'll discuss keeping our brains healthy. Do you know what kind of foods, exercise, and mental tasks that can keep you thinking sharp in your later years? What have you always wondered about the brain and how it works? We're ready for your questions. Join us as we explore our wonderful and complicated brains right here on our electronic talking circle right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A recently released federal report shows rates of violence against young Native people are the highest in the country compared to any other group. Christine Trudeau reports key members of the report's task force are working to address problems youth face.
A 2013 Department of Justice initiative set forth a task force to examine what's happening to Native youth, specifically violence. The DOJ report details initiatives to strengthen overall Native youth welfare, expand VAWA amendments to include protection over Native youth, increase funds to support tribal justice systems, and ensure White House and congressional compliance with the Indian Child Welfare Act. Former Senator Byron Dorgan sits as co-chairman on the advisory committee to the task force.
You know, this will be on the desks of members of Congress and the president. And there will be pressure, I think, from every Indian tribe in the country that has this report as well to say to the Congress, here it is, here's what you have to do, and now we expect you to do it.
Following the report's release, Dorgan hosted a panel discussion in Washington, D.C. It included White House and health representatives, as well as young Native people, and actor Cheske Spencer, known for his role in the Vampire Twilight saga. Spencer expressed the importance of his visit, saying, he's no stranger to the many hard realities facing Native youth today.
You know, the suicide statistic is, that's it, for me, it keeps getting bigger and bigger each time I look at it. And I don't know where you start with that with kids, especially in this, because kids, I knew a kid, 11-year-old suicide victim. She was 11 years old. I mean, how old do you have to be? How bad is it? And it's bad. It's pretty bad.
To Senator Dorgan, the battle is just beginning.
You know, we're talking about housing, health care, education, foster care. I mean, it's hard to just say, all right, we know what the problem is, because it's not one set of problems. It's a wide range of problems.
Special Assistant to the President for Native American Affairs, Jody Gillette, emphasized the White House's role in working with the DOJ's task force in securing as much as they can into permanent policy before the current president's term is up.
We are in the final quarter of this administration, and thinking forward about what can we do, what is the most impactful investments that we can make to really, really turn the pages on the dark chapters of the relations between the United States and tribes.
A White House Tribal Nations Conference is set to take place on December 3rd, where Gillette says the president will be in discussion with tribal leaders on a number of Native issues. For National Native News, I'm Christine Trudeau.
Obama administration cabinet secretaries are among those taking part in this week's White House Tribal Nations Conference. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell will hold a panel discussion on education reform and climate change. Other issues will be discussed, like economic development and trust responsibilities. The conference is an opportunity for tribal leaders to interact directly with the president and his administration. It begins Wednesday morning in Washington, D.C., and will be streamed live at doi.gov. The inauguration of Alaska's new governor and lieutenant governor takes place today. A swearing-in ceremony for Bill Walker and Byron Mallott is being held in Juneau. The transition team includes a number of Alaska Native people. The team recently met to address issues in the state, including many facing Alaska Native people like hunting and fishing rights, education, and tribal sovereignty. Mallott, who initially ran for governor before joining the ticket as lieutenant governor, is a well-known Native leader in the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
National Native News brings you information from around Indian country. Find out how to reach our listeners while also supporting this program by visiting nativenews.net.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Today we're talking about our brains. And did you know that the human brain weighs about 3 pounds, but is responsible for a whole lot more than the space it takes up? Without our brains, we wouldn't be able to walk or talk or even breathe. And have you ever wondered just how your brain works? Why is it that some things are easy to remember and others are easily forgotten? And what exactly is happening when we think about or visualize something in our minds? As we prepare for 2015, many of you will be starting new fitness and nutrition plans. Maybe your reasons are to have a healthy body. And have you ever considered what it takes to have a healthy brain? And what exercises can make our brain strong? And what about brain food? Have you heard about food that makes your brain stronger? Well, we've got a guest today who can answer these questions and more, and we want you to call with your questions about the brain. The number to reach us is 1-800-996-2848, and the number to also have your voice heard is 1-800-99-NATIVE. And joining us now from Anchorage, Alaska, is Dr. Adam Grove, and he is a naturopathic physician and board chair of the Alaska Brain Injury Network. Welcome to Native America Calling, Dr. Grove.
Good morning, Tara. Thank you.
And Dr. Grove, let's start off with just learning a little bit more about the brain. Some of the basics, you know, how exactly does the brain work in our bodies?
Well, the brain is a very complex organ. We oftentimes don't think about it, even though thinking about it requires using our brain. The reality is that the brain is probably more complex than we realize. In the last decade, we've learned a lot more about the brain than we've ever known before. And I think some simple ways of thinking about it is that it is primarily electric. And so it requires, electronic sort of circuitry. It's also chemical, and it's also physical. And so we have to look at all of those dimensions when we're talking about brain function, and if there are brain deficits, they can happen because of the physical aspects, such as cells dying or lack of blood supply. And certainly from the electrical point of view, we think about things like epilepsy. And the chemical things, we think about things like using drugs that affect brain function. So it's a very complex organ, and I think it's something we're discovering new things every day about the brain.
And you know, when I think of the brain, I'm always amazed at all of the different things that it's responsible for and, you know, and how it keeps all of us functioning, even with, you know, our crazy lives or busy schedules that we lead. And it's exciting to hear that, you know, there is still more to be discovered about the brain. And Dr. Grove, you know, you said that scientists are still discovering new things about our brains. Anything exciting to share with our audience that something we know today that maybe we didn't know 5 years ago?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I started medical school, and that was back 2000, well, I graduated in 2002. When I started, several years before that, the current wisdom was that we didn't grow new brain cells, new neurons. By the time I graduated, we realized that we could actually grow new neurons. And they're grown primarily in, at least as far as we know now, in the hippocampal region, which is responsible for memory. And so that's a huge change that just happened in the last 10 years or so that dramatically changes the way we look at the brain and the fact that we now know that we can change our brain in ways we never thought possible before. This idea of neuroplasticity And in fact, there was just released a study, again, this was on rats, but what they did is they injected a rat with human brain cells from a fetus. So they were sort of what they call undifferentiated. So the cells hadn't really decided what they were going to be, and they injected these into the rats. And within a period of time, what they found is the rat, those human cells basically took over the rat brain, and the rats were smarter as a result. And so that's pretty amazing stuff, and that study was just released this morning. And so it literally is, day by day, if you follow brain news, exciting stuff happening.
I think we need to follow some more of that. It's interesting just to hear different discoveries. And what about you? Are you excited to learn more about the brain? You know, give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. We are going to take all your calls today. If you ever wondered about something, call in and ask our doctor. He's on the line. What about brain health? Have you heard things to make your brain healthier? Call in and ask your questions or compare what you heard. 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Dr. Grove, when we think about our brain, you know, does the size matter? You know, if you have a bigger brain, are you smarter?
Well, the human brain is certainly not the largest brain on the planet, but we are unique in we have kind of what we call the primitive brain, which controls things like breathing and bowel movements and, you know, those type of things that we don't really think about. And then the upper part of the brain, or the cortex, and that's where a lot of higher order thinking and processing happens. And we do differ from a lot of animals in the sense that we do have a lot more of that part of our brain. And I oftentimes wonder about that here, you know, when it's, you know, minus 20 and I see a moose standing outside nibbling at the spruce trees. You know, are they worried about what's going to come tomorrow? Are they worried that maybe they'll run out of spruce or the snow will get too deep? You know, and so what we think is that if you don't have that part of your brain as highly developed, maybe we don't have those kind of functions, you know, worrying and, you know, and forethought and those type of things. But again, we don't, you know, I think the reality is that we don't know exactly. But, you know, so size, you know, maybe doesn't matter. Our brain really, you know, physicists have looked at this, our brain really actually can't get any larger and still support itself. So we're pretty much optimized with what we've got. But that being said, obviously, people have different brains and different functions. But it's interesting to think about the fact if we looked at Einstein's brain, which actually is preserved somewhere in a jar, if we looked at Einstein's brain and you know, any, you know, other average person's brain, you wouldn't be able to, from the outside, physically tell any difference. And so it's not that his brain was any larger, he just used it differently.
So what about the phrase, make your brain grow? What do you think when you hear that?
What we're talking about there is actually increasing the connections within the brain. You know, so when we are first born, and it happens amazingly fast, within the first six, seven months of life, our brain, we're born with huge numbers of connections, and then what happens is those connections start to drop off because we're kind of born with this idea that we can be anything, we can speak any language, and then as we kind of settle into who our parents are, who our community is, and what languages and so forth we're going to be speaking, then those extra connections are cut so we can be more efficient at those connections we do keep. And so it's that idea of pruning. And so we talk about, you know, growing our brain, what we're talking about is actually developing those connections, because we lose that huge connection of interconnected neurons. We lose those very rapidly in our infancy. But as an adult, we obviously grow new ones. We can learn to play the piano or do math. And so that's what we're talking about when we're talking about growing the brain. And what happens to basically grow our brain is we need to do things over and over and over again, because when we do a certain thing, it activates certain parts of the brain, and we basically send electrical circuits, electrical signals down neurons. And so and neurons, basically, there's the cell body, and then there's these long arms called axons, and they can reach from our brain down to our little toe, or they can be millimeters in length. But the more we do one thing, the more we activate those neurons, the more myelin, which is an insulating sheath that goes around these little long axon arms, the more myelin that gets on those axons, the faster the signal travels. So if I wanted to learn to play piano, I would have to practice and practice. And the more I practice, the more insulation I would get, and the faster the signals will travel. And, you know, after a period of time, I might be able to do a, you know, reasonable rendition of something on the piano. And so that's what we mean by growing our brain, is basically making new connections. And we know that we can do that until we die. So there's no excuse for not growing our brains.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Grove. And again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-28. We are talking 2848, and we are talking about our brains today. And we want to know, what questions do you have about the brain? And you can call in, ask them, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go to our first caller. We have Alan in Las Vegas, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Welcome to the hour, Alan. And what are you wondering?
Oh, man, you opened a can of worms for me, because for years, friends of mine have been telling me, warning me about cell phones and having them next to your body, and high-powered lines affecting our electrical system, our internal, our brain and body electrical system. And I'd like to hear what he has to say about that.
All right, Alan, hang out. Dr. Grove, what do you know about this?
Well, I guess the best way to say it is the jury is still out on the effects of cell phones and brain cancer. There have been some large studies, hundreds of participants over a long period of time, something like 10, 20 years, and have not found evidence of any connection between cell phone use and brain function or brain cancer. But, that being said, we do know that since our brain is electric, electric circuits influence other electrical circuits. And so I think we can't say, that yes, it's just fine. I still think, and I usually advise my patients to use, reasonable cautions, do the hands-free thing. Children nowadays all seem to have cell phones, so I advise them, not keep them by the bed, or if they are, put them on the, airplane setting or something like that to reduce the emanations. Because we've had this large study that didn't find anything, again, with our brain and the complexity, we don't know exactly how that may be impacting things. But I don't think I would throw my cell phone away.
All right. Alan, any more questions?
I think that's it. Thank you very much.
All right, Alan, thank you for your call. And you can call in with your questions too, 1-800-996-2848, or you can get at us on social media. We're on Facebook and we're on Twitter at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Dr. Grove, I want to go ahead and bring in a question that we got on Facebook. Somebody asked, does drinking alcohol really soak your brain matter? What do you know about that?
Well, alcohol really does affect the brain in many ways. It's basically, alcohol is basically toxic to our bodies, and we do know that alcohol alters brain function. And there's been some interesting work on brain development and exposure to alcohol. We know that alcohol exposure to a fetus when it's in the womb has some ill effects that are well documented. But they're finding those effects of alcohol and other drugs as well, change the way the brain develops up until the brain is fully developed. And the brain doesn't fully develop until mid-20s, 25, 26, some people are saying, even into the 30s. So I don't recommend that people drink in excess for lots of reasons, but clearly from the brain perspective, it's not helpful. And a lot of people will use alcohol or drugs to relax, do these type of things. But like marijuana, for example, which is used a lot to help people relax, what happens, it actually ends up having the opposite effect. It actually increases anxiety, and people will drink because they're depressed, but it actually increases the depression. So it does have these sort of counterintuitive effects on the brain. And again, it's not part of, drinking in moderation. A glass of wine here or there is probably not an issue. And sometimes, there have been some studies that have shown that can be effective in more antioxidants and so forth in the body, which is useful for good brain function. But obviously, drinking in excess is not good for the brain.
What about when you hear people say you're killing your brain when you drink?
Yes, well, it does actually happen. You can actually kill those neurons that we're talking about, those brain cells, by exposing them to all sorts of toxic substances. So another issue that comes up, especially in the sort of rural areas in Alaska, is exposure to toxic fumes and those type of things, which are well documented to have toxic effects on the brain. So you can actually, every day, even if you're living a very healthy lifestyle, we're losing a lot of, I mean, we're talking, you know, hundreds of thousands of neurons. Of course, we've got billions to start with, but we lose those at a fairly rapid rate, and that's just part of the normal aging process. And so I wouldn't want to do anything else to increase that loss of those neurons. And so, you know, alcohol, other toxics, drugs, and so forth will do that.
All right. Thanks for that, Dr. Grove. And what do you think about what you just heard? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Let's go ahead and bring in Kathleen in Spokane, Washington, tuned in on KSFC. And Kathleen, what would you like to share with us?
Hi, Dr. Grove. I'm someone who's had a brain injury, and I just wanted to share what I did to recover from that, which as a naturopath you'll probably appreciate, because conventional medicine had absolutely nothing to offer. And I make my living with my brain, so I couldn't work. And so the first thing, I had a concussion from a car accident where the airbag hit me in the face. And I had a lot of dizziness and losing my balance. And there were three things that I did that helped me heal. The first thing was craniosacral therapy, and that got rid of the dizziness and losing my balance. And also I had, well, this probably wasn't part of the brain, my neck was off so that I couldn't swallow right. So I fixed all that. Still couldn't think, though. Then the next thing that I did was neurotherapy for about a year, and that helped remove the brain fog, but my memory was still toast. And I would forget words all the time, couldn't think on my feet. And all those things are necessary in my line of work. And then the third thing I finally did was, by chance, I was at a vitamin sale, and there were manufacturers' representatives there, and this lady came up to me with this little booklet that a doctor had written. She said, I think you need this. And it was on all these supplements for brain health. And I started taking a number of things, DHA, and then my naturopath put me on DHEA also, and all these, you know, fish oil type things that are supposed to be good for your brain. And then that was the final piece. But all this took 2.5 years to recover.
And Kathleen, thank you for sharing that with us. Dr. Grove, what do you think about Kathleen's path to recovery and making her brain stronger?
Well, Kathleen, I think, you know, you're the poster child for recovery from a brain injury. your path kind of highlights what we need to do for people with brain injury, which is approach this from multiple angles. So with craniosacral therapy, which is sort of gentle manipulation of the skull, of the bones in the body, not in a chiropractic type of way, but a much more subtle way of dealing with this, you dealt with two things. One, the impact of the skull itself. And most people are now, I think, beginning to realize the medical textbooks have been revised to reflect this. The skull is not one big bony lump. It's composed of many bones that move. And so in a car accident, getting smacked by a baseball, those bones actually shift, and that does affect the brain that lies underneath it. You also dealt with the neck, which is a very common problem in brain injury. People forget, you know, in order to impact your brain, you've got to move your head far enough and fast enough, and that usually ends up impacting the neck. And so you dealt with the physical aspects, and then you basically did some brain training with your neurotherapy, which helped with, you know, removing the brain fog, those type of things. And then you basically looked at the supplement or the nutrition aspect, and several things there. DHA, which is a type of omega-3 fat, which comes from fish and some nuts and seeds like flax. And you also were taking DHEA, which is a precursor to hormones in the body. And there's a doctor in California, Dr. Gordon, who's done a lot of research on hormones after brain injury and finds out that they are oftentimes severely disturbed and need to be sort of rebalanced. And so you basically took a multi-prong approach, which is what we recommend for people with any sort of brain issue, not just a brain injury, but, you know, failing memory, those type of things. These are all very important aspects.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Grove. And Kathleen, any advice out there to folks who also might be recovering from a brain injury? Were there any hurdles that you came over that you'd like to share some advice on?
I would advise them to start seeking out those alternative treatments right away and not wait, because the doctor kept saying it'd get better, and it didn't. And I mean, I lost a whole year right there just waiting for it to get better, because conventional medicine didn't have anything to offer other than the passage of time.
All right, Kathleen, great advice. Thank you for your call, and thank you for sharing there in Spokane, Washington. Again, phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. And when it comes to brain injuries, what do you know about it? Have you recovered, and do you also have some advice? Call us right now, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Dr. Grove, when it does come to brain injury, is there any more things that you can put out there so that we're all thinking about this, or, you know, some of those first steps once you have survived a brain injury?
Yes, well, I mean, millions of Americans are in this situation, and I think the awareness of brain injuries is increasing every year. The NFL and NHL have brought a lot of attention to this with, you know, what they call chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which is basically brain injury every weekend as you're playing sports. And so people are starting to realize that a concussion playing football or playing hockey is a brain injury. It's not just having your bell rung; it's actually a brain injury. And so the important thing with brain injury is to recognize when it happens and not to get another one. And this is a key issue with student athletes, that this, what they call, you know, repeated hit problem, which is you get a brain injury and the coach says, oh, you're just fine, put you back in, and then bad things happen. We've had student athletes die as a result of this. So the important thing, I think, you know, the take-home message for brain injury with sport is, talk to your coach about this. There are many tools out there. Most states will have a brain injury association or some sort of a network that can help with this. But coaches should know, you know, when to leave kids out after a concussion, and parents need to be aware of this. And so, it's worth having this discussion with your coach. What happens if a child sustains a concussion, and what rules will be followed? And there's screening tools for this. And every athletic association should be aware of these, but oftentimes they're not, especially in smaller communities. So parents can do a lot for that. And for other folks, most people will sustain brain injuries in, you know, four-wheeler accidents or motor vehicle accidents, things like that. And the key point is, like Kathleen pointed out, is that do start doing something to help with this. And if you're doctor doesn't know about brain injury, which is not that uncommon, find people that do and start doing things. It doesn't get better if you just, you know, sit at home and wait for this to get better.
All right. Dr. Adam Grove is on the line with us, sharing some good advice. And we also have the phone lines open for you to participate today. And we are talking about our brains today. What are you wondering about it? And in the second half, we'll hear more about keeping our brains healthy. You can call in, ask your questions, 1-800-996-2848. What's on your calendar this month? Are you gearing up for a holiday event or celebration? What about competitions? Are you dusting off your gingerbread house recipe to take the gold at this year's bake-off? Or are you using this month to get ahead in your field with training? Join us for our current events and share the details.
Buju, healthy communities start with healthy families. Open enrollment for health insurance starts November 15th. Find out if you and your family qualify for free or low-cost health insurance. Contact your local Indian health program, visit www.healthcare.gov/tribal, or call 1-800-318-2596 to apply, pick a plan, enroll, and answer your questions. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support for Kawanak Broadcast Corporation provided by Keishi, a direct outlet for Zuni arts and crafts, including fetishes and jewelry. Keishi, working with the Zuni people since 1981 at 227 Don Gaspar in downtown Santa Fe.
Welcome back to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. And thanks for joining us today. Every day we stream live on Native Voice One, and you can check it out at nv1.org. And we also podcast the show every day, too. All you have to do is search for Native America Calling on your device's podcast app. And today we are talking about the brain. And have you ever wondered exactly how our brain works or what kinds of foods we need to eat to make our brain strong and alert? And some of you might be wondering how we can keep our mind sharp into our later years. If you're wondering that, call us right now. We want to hear from you. We'll take your questions. And the number to reach us is 1-800-996-2848. And Dr. Adam Grove is here with us today. He is a naturopathic doctor and board chair of the Alaska Brain Injury Network. And he's ready for your calls, too. 1-800-996-2848. Let's go ahead and go straight to the phone lines. We have Lorene in Santa Fe, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. And Lorene, what are you wondering?
Hi. Love your show. Thanks for taking my call. I'm 60 years old now, but I've had short-term memory loss since I'm 28. And it's, of course, now a long-term memory loss. And I just finally got a doctor who sent me for neuropsych testing because I did have an emotional trauma at 28, but I'm three-quarters way through the testing, and they are finding I have logical memory loss. I mean logical something memory loss and visual memory loss, but my verbal is really high. I'm only three-quarters way through the testing, but it's like at least, you know, after all this time, somebody finally found something. But, you know, I still don't know if it's emotional, physical. But I was vegetarian, vegan for 8 years at that time. Nobody talked about supplements. I'm so glad that other caller, you know, gave a whole list of things to do. And then I was vegan for another, 40 years altogether. So I'm wondering if that may have a lot to do with, you know, not getting the right oils, not getting the right, all the lists that she gave. And if the doctor this year, though, I'm having balance issues, and I'm just kind of looking for other resources. I heard the supplements. That's excellent. You know, I wish I'd heard it 40 years ago.
All right, Lorene, let's hear from the doctor. Dr. Grove, what do you think?
Well, this is a great question because it kind of covers a number of issues. So, I mean, the first thing is I'm glad you're getting a neuropsychological evaluation done. And so for those who don't know what this is, and Lorene, you probably can echo this, it's an extremely arduous series of tests and usually given over several days. And it's a very thorough assessment of your sort of neurological function. And so it tests for memory and processing speed and various types of memory and verbal capabilities, ability to do math, all these things. So it's very good at kind of finding where these defects lie. But then the real question then comes in terms of what to do about it. And so a couple things in this story kind of caught my ear. One is the trauma. So trauma, especially early on, we do know that trauma does affect the way the brain functions, and long-term stress also has a huge effect on brain function, basically the ability to maintain those connections we were talking about earlier. Long-term depression does this too. These connections actually shrink. They actually go away. And so the trauma piece is very important, and that oftentimes is not well addressed in conventional medicine. It's not that you need to go to the psychiatrist and get a pill for this. There are many other ways through counseling or various other types of therapy to work through that trauma. And even though it was a long time ago, it's still with us. And then the issue about, you know, diet, you know, and with vegans, it can be problematic because they may not be getting those good fats, and basically those omega-3 fats, but those can come from vegetable sources such as flax seed, chia seed, hemp seed. Those are all good sources of flax or those omega-3 oils, and you don't just have to get them from fish. But we also need adequate protein, and we need a diet that's not super high in sugars for good brain function. So it sounds like you're on the right path with getting a good evaluation to identify exactly where the problems lie. And then brain training, you know, neurofeedback and various other ways of dealing with those particular issues can help tremendously.
All right, Lorene, thank you for your call. They're in Santa Fe. Let's take another. Again, if you have questions you want to add to the conversation, 1-800-99-NATIVE is the number to call. Let's go ahead and bring in Lori in Seattle, Washington, tuned in online. Lori, what would you like to know?
Good morning. I was wondering what impact he feels Parkinson's disease has on brain function as far as memory and cognitive functions.
All right, Lori, go ahead, Dr. Grove.
Well, Parkinson's disease is one of those many diseases called basically neurodegenerative diseases. So basically what happens is our brain starts to break down, and certain parts of the brain, you know, in this case, there's certain aspects, you know, certain parts of the brain that start to not function properly. And basically what happens, we no longer can make the connections that we used to make, and there's a decrease in some of the chemicals our brains produce. So typically with Parkinson's, we'll see problems with motion or ability to use your muscles, those type of things. But it does also affect other aspects of the brain, including memory and cognition. And it's one of those neurodegenerative diseases, which means something is falling apart that shouldn't be falling apart. And so there have been a lot of studies over the years on how to deal with this. And what they're finding is that there are many aspects to this. There can be toxins that attack part of the brain. There can be lack of nutrients that affect the brain. And so in cases of Parkinson's, I recommend people, you know, talk with their doctors and talk to folks who are good about brain issues and look at things like omega-3 fatty acids and other nutrients that potentially can make things better. Maybe we can't reverse the damage that's been done, but maybe there's a possibility of slowing it.
All right. Thank you for your call, Lori. Again, 1-800-99-NATIVE is the way to get in. Let's go ahead and hear from John now in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. And John, what would you like to know?
Well, I was curious about a comment that Dr. Grove made earlier about marijuana causing anxiety in the similar way that alcohol has a reverse effect from what people seek. And I thought that since we discovered cannabinoids receptors in the brain in 1996, that the research was showing that cannabis actually has a great medical utility for things like post-traumatic stress disorder. In fact, in New Mexico, we have probably about 4,000 or 5,000 patients on the medical cannabis program here. And I've heard testimonies at the state hearings where children would come in and say, my dad was in the Gulf War, and I couldn't even relate to him because of his PTSD. But once he started using the medical cannabis, I was able to have a relationship with him, and it became a very loving and positive experience for them. So I'm just wondering if I think this is something very hopeful for the future.
Okay, thank you for your call, John. Dr. Grove, go ahead.
Yes, John, thanks for that clarification. I think it's, you know, I'm not, I'm certainly, and I've actually recommended marijuana for some of my patients as well, because it does have a positive effect in many ways, and I think the distinguishing factor here is chronic use versus sort of medically indicated use, because marijuana, those cannabinoids, which are in marijuana, have been shown to have a positive effect on the amygdala, which is that part of the brain where we have that anxiety or flight or fight response. And there have been many studies with PTSD, post-traumatic stress syndrome, and it does help relax that part of the brain. What happens is chronic use, so overuse of marijuana, so smoking it or eating it, ingesting it many times in a day, actually can have, like many things, sort of that vicious cycle of actually increasing that anxiety, which then drives us to try to smoke or eat more, and creates that cycle. So I think we have to differentiate between sort of medical use and sort of chronic use sort of on your own without some medical advice. So that's a really good clarification, because I'm definitely not saying that we should not be using those substances, because they can be useful in a medically indicated manner.
All right, thanks for that. And we are learning more about the brain. With us today, we have Dr. Adam Grove, and we also want you to join us. We've talked a little bit about how our brain works and what happens when there are brain injuries, and we're hearing more about making it healthier. What would you like to know? Or maybe you have figured out a routine to make your brain healthier and you want to share it with the rest of Native America? Call us right now. 1-800-996-2848 is the number to join our conversation. Let's go ahead and keep these phone lines going. We're going to go ahead now and bring in Brenda in Deering, Alaska, tuned in on KOTZ. And Brenda, do you have a question for us?
Oh, thank you for taking my call. Yes, I do. I just wanted to ask a question about the game Mahjong, you know, with the tiles. Is that helpful in developing the brain better? I'll hang up and listen to your answer on the air. Thank you.
All right, Brenda, thank you for your call there in Deering, Alaska. Dr. Grove, what do you think about Mahjong?
It's, you know, it's a great question, because, and like I had said earlier in the show, it's really, when it comes to brain function, it's all about the connections. And so when you're playing things like Mahjong, or learning to play the piano, or as studies have shown, you know, speaking more than one language, you have more connections and you're developing more connections than the person who's sitting on the sofa watching TV. And so, again, it's about developing those connections and maintaining the ones we have. And over time, as we age, we will lose connections. That's just a given. But you can do things to create new connections. And the studies have kind of concluded that there's several factors that can help maintain good brain function as we age. And one of those is being social. And that's primarily because social activity is very challenging to the brain. You have to determine what somebody's saying, and are they being sarcastic, what's their body language. So you have to, it's a tremendous amount of bandwidth that our brain uses for social activities. And that's the beauty of Mahjong, is you don't play it by yourself. It's a social activity. And another factor is travel. And again, because it challenges the brain. And so, and things like sleep and diet are also important there as well. So I'm a big fan of things that challenge the brain and to do them in a social manner. So it's a little different playing a game on the computer than playing Mahjong. So I would, you know, I think that the social aspects of this are hugely important, and the importance of communities in getting elders involved, not isolated, is a key piece to maintaining a healthy brain as we age.
Well, when you mention games, there is a lot, you know, and is there something that you and your family do to keep not only socializing, but also to keep your brains going? What about traditional games? Give us a call, 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. And Dr. Grove, I've been wondering, when we talk about a little bit more about, you know, exercising our brain and getting it working, what about just speaking in our traditional languages? Any thoughts on that, of how it really gets the brain moving?
Yes, well, there have been some really good studies, and there's one that just came out from Belgium, and they showed that there's a significant difference in people who are speaking more than one language, and certainly with, you know, native languages, most people who are speaking their native language are also speaking another language, and so that basically builds those connections. And if the child, you know, if you've got a little baby, and they're growing up in a household where you're speaking, let's say, Navajo as well as English, that baby is going to maintain more of those connections we talked about earlier, that they have abundance of those when they're babies. And so maintaining those connections means you've got more connections as you go through life. And music will have the same effect as another language, in that sense of developing those areas of the brain and maintaining those later into life. And it's interesting, they found with folks with Alzheimer's that they will retain memories of music and song more than they'll maintain memories of spoken word. And they actually, there was this great study where they asked nurses to sing directions to their Alzheimer's patients rather than just speaking them. And they found if the nurse did a little song with the directions about taking your pills or whatever, the Alzheimer's patients actually remembered it. So we're wired for music, for song, and those type of things. So Native culture has a lot to offer in that regard because that's a much bigger part of their culture than it is for a lot of the rest of us. And so I really encourage people to do that. Besides, it's culturally relevant. And if it's in your community, then by all means, engage in that and get the elders out there as well.
All right. What do you think? 1-800-996-2848. We mentioned games earlier, and I got to ask, what about kids and video games?
Excellent question. Well, what we're finding with kids and video games, again, is kind of like the it's like the marijuana question. You know, a little bit can be good, too much can be bad. And but it does alter the way, you know, kids' brains develop. And what I advise my patients is not to get, don't get little kids involved. Don't give your two-year-old your cell phone and let them play on that. Let them do other things if you can. You know, get them into reading or playing, running around, those type of things. And occasional use is not going to damage their brain. But the reality is we're finding what happens is the threshold for engagement, you know, so the point at which children become excited and engaged and their brain kind of turns on increases if you play a lot of computer games because it's so exciting. The threshold, you know, is lower, so it's like you easily get excited. And then you go to class and you sit and watch your English teacher drone on about, you know, Greek literature. It's just not very exciting, and so the brain doesn't activate. So we need to make sure that we don't do too many of those games. And there's certainly positive aspects to that in terms of increasing processing speed and maybe memory, those type of things. But in general, we need to make sure our children's brains are developing in a robust way with well-balanced, you know, exercise and diet. And, you know, some computer games would be fine, but I ask my patients to limit those to maybe 30 minutes a day.
All right. Dr. Grove, thank you very much. And I want to go ahead and bring in another voice to our conversation. Joining us now from Auburn, California, is Luana Lam, and she is a diabetes program manager and a certified brain integrator, and she is Cree and Cherokee. Welcome to the hour, Luana.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
And Luana, anything you want to add? We are learning a lot about the brain, especially when it comes to being healthy. Go ahead, Luana.
I agree a lot with what everybody has said, especially Dr. Grove, that the brain is a complex entity in and of itself, and we have to do things that support it as well as the whole body. So if you're eating well, and, you know, I know we just got through with Thanksgiving holiday and everybody overate, and that fog you feel afterwards where everybody wants to pass out on the couch, that's your body's way, your brain's way of telling you you had way too much food in a combination that didn't work well for the body in general. So to monitor what you're eating, and, you know, unfortunately, I know in our Native communities, junk food has become a really big deal with sodas and eating fast foods and, you know, our time are limited. But all of those things decrease the brain's ability to function as well as the body, which increases diabetes in our community. You know, and too much sugar, too much of anything is going to create a brain fog for us. So, you know, to just kind of step back and become our own health warriors to take care of our own cells in our community and start making those changes a little bit at a time and saying, you know, I'm going to do things that support my brain. I'm going to get out and exercise. I'm not going to eat all the junk food. You know, and we know I'm not a physician or a doctor. I'm a holistic health practitioner, that there are things that support the brain. The brain needs fatty acids in order to function. So the vegetarian who was talking earlier, walnuts, seeds, eggs, peanut butter, all of those things, even dark chocolate, a little bit of chocolate, will help the brain have the tools it needs to keep itself healthy and strong. So it's in my way of looking at the brain from a holistic point of view, if we give it what it needs to work, it has a better chance of doing all the things it's meant to do.
That's a great way to think about it, Luana. And do you have any advice or tips about just immediate substitutes we can do to just kind of help our brain along?
Well, you know, one of the things we forget about, I think, in our communities is we're so addicted to sugar. Just because, one, our body was never meant to have it. We didn't get it until the European colonies came with it. So we really, the body doesn't know how to digest it. Not that anybody does real well with it, but natives in particular do not do well with it. But we want to maintain that blood sugar because sugar is also what fuels the brain. So you always want to think about, what am I giving my brain to function? So you could replace sugary items with, let's say, peanut butter if you're not allergic to peanuts, or almond butter, because that both has protein and fatty acids that will help maintain blood sugar. You can have berries. Berries are very good. They're sweet. So one of the things that we have done to ourselves is we've created a taste bud problem. We think, you know, you want sugary, 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 and then when you taste Mother Nature's sugar, it doesn't taste as sweet. But when you wean yourself off of that processed sugar, you'll find that things like berries and bananas and apples taste a lot sweeter than they did when you were eating, you know, two or three soda pops a day, or candy and sugar and pies and all those things that the taste bud loves and the body becomes addicted to.
This is some great advice, especially around the holidays. Thanks for that, Luana. We got some more callers are going to weave in. And again, if there's something you are still wondering about the brain, send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. You can also send us an email. Send it to comments@nativeamericacalling.com. Let's go on over to Gualala, California now. And we are going to bring in Barbara, who is tuned in on KGUA. And Barbara, what would you like to share?
I got in a car accident quite a few years ago, and I was told by the doctor that I had memory loss. And I don't know whether it was short-term or long-term, but it's still there. I wasn't told what to do about it. What happened was I was on a lonely road late at night in a town I didn't even know, way up north there I wasn't too familiar with. And I spun out on a rut in the road or something like that, and I went fishtailing all over the place and conked out at the steering wheel. When I came to, I was okay, and I had to drive the car home, and I totaled it. So anyway, ever since then, my memory has just been a total loss. I can't remember certain things. It's not like I can't remember 5 minutes from now. It's like I don't want to remember the accident, and I don't want to remember major things. Major things I can't remember. I don't know how to explain that part. But
all right, Barbara, let's ask Dr. Grove if he's got any advice for you. Dr. Grove, anything you'd like to share with Barbara?
Yes, Barbara, I think, and again, this is not an uncommon situation. I'm really glad that you're asking the question, because a lot of people just figure this is something they just have to put up with. This is just something that happened. But we do know that we can train memory, and what we really need to do is we need to figure out where exactly the problems are. And so, again, I think, you know, we had talked previously about neuropsychological evaluations, and that's a really good place to start, because the reality is the brain is very complex, and your memory issues, sometimes it actually isn't memory issues, sometimes it's actually attention or encoding issues. And so a good neuropsychological evaluation will really help. And you should hopefully be able to find one in your community. And they usually are very smart about brain injury, and they are really good at identifying where the problems are, and they may then be able to help point you towards someone who can then help with, you know, exercises, those type of things that can be done to increase memory. But I think, you know, some of the things Luana said about diet apply here as well. I mean, if we have a brain injury, and I actually do from an accident many years ago, I had to be very careful about things like sleep, my diet, exercise, stress levels. And so all of those apply to you as well, and not only a way of maintaining a healthy brain, but also helping an injured brain as well.
Okay, let's take one more call. We got Kathy on the line. She is driving in Montana. And Kathy, go ahead. You got about a minute.
Yeah. I suffer from bipolar and schizoaffective disorder, and I have to take just a lot of pills. And they say it's to replace the chemicals that my brain doesn't produce. Is there anything I can do that's an alternative to all these chemicals that I have to put into my body?
All right, Kathy, thank you for the question. Go ahead, Dr. Grove.
Well, these are, you know, I think what we're finding out with mental illness is that it's not just in our head. A lot of it has to do with our biological functions elsewhere in our body. And, for example, depression has been linked to problems in the gut. And so what I would advise is to find a holistic practitioner who can look at you as a whole person and look outside of just psychiatry and look and see there's many factors. There are supplements and other things that can help with this. But a thorough evaluation kind of needs to be done, and the whole person has to be looked at. You're more than just your brain, and our brain is impacted by our body. So we need to look at all of those factors in a case like this. But I'm right there with you that, you know, a bunch of psychoactive medications is not necessarily the best way to move forward with this. It helps keep you stable, but there are some other things that could be done to help along the way.
All right, Kathy, thank you for your call. And, you know, we are just starting the conversation about the brain. And, of course, it's always advised to check with your own physician and to do research. I think we hear that often on our show, that check several sources and definitely ask a lot of questions. Kathy, thank you for your call. And Dr. Grove, we've mentioned it a couple of times and definitely want to reserve some space today when we talk about the sleep, talking about good sleep and how it benefits our brain. Go ahead, Dr. Grove. We've got about a minute.
Perfect. Well, sleep is one of my favorite things, and it's a favorite subject because most Americans are chronically underslept, and how much sleep we need varies from person to person. But I think the studies are pretty conclusive now that a chronic lack of sleep is kind of the equivalent of getting a brain injury. And so I advise my patients, if they're not sleeping well, is to talk to the doctor about ways to sleep. And sleep medications are not always the best answer. We need to look at sleep, again, in a very holistic manner. Sleep medications can actually be detrimental to brain function. And so good natural sleep is really important. And so there are a number of things that can help with that. But the primary thing is, again, look at what you're eating, and also exercise is a really great way to help with sleep. But, yeah, sleep is important. If your brain is not functioning well, maybe you need more sleep.
All right. Thank you very much. And we have reached the end of our show today. Thank you to all of our callers and our guests, Dr. Adam Grove and Luana Lam. And we are just kicking off this week here. There are more great shows ahead. Tomorrow is our monthly current event show. So if there is something you would like to tell millions of listeners about, call in tomorrow with the details. We want to know about it. And if there are any upcoming deadlines in December or early January, it's also a place to share with many people across Native America. We're on over 60 stations, so you are reaching many people. Thanks to our staff, our executive producer, Sarah Gustavus, senior producer, Monica Brain, associate producer, Andy Murphy, our engineer, Stephen Emmons, and Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News. We'll be back tomorrow. I'm Tara Gatewood.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
The law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization located in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Music is provided by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.